Father McVeary, you've just been nominated for receiving the award of the Freedom of Dublin. How do you feel about that?
Well, I feel very honoured, obviously, and perhaps a little bit overwhelmed by it. I appreciate very much what the Lord Mayor and Dublin City Council have done. And I'm delighted to be in the company of somebody like Brian O'Driscoll, who has achieved so much in his career. He's achieved almost everything you can achieve in the rugby world. But I look at my own career, and I mean, I've spent 35 years trying to eliminate or at least reduce homelessness. And the end result is that homelessness is worse than ever before in the history of the state, really. So I don't think that's much of an achievement. But nevertheless, I'm very grateful to them. The award isn't to me personally as such, but it's to a whole organisation of people who have made a difference to the lives of some homeless people, at least.
Because it wasn't always known as the Father Peter McVeary Trust, isn't that right?
No, it was originally, we named it the Arupe Society, after a famous Jesuit Superior General, Father Pedro Arupe, who was a very charismatic man, and we considered him really to be our second founder, and he set the Society of Jesus on the path of faith with justice, and justice being an integral component of the preaching of the faith. But unless you had Jesuit connections, people didn't know what a Arupe Society meant. And our little fundraising team, who do a terrific amount of work, spent half their time explaining what a Arupe Society stood for. So they asked, could they change the name to the Peter McVeary Trust? People would know what that meant. So very reluctantly, I agreed. It's a little embarrassing having an organisation called after you. Usually they do that after you're dead. And maybe it was wishful thinking on the part of the fundraising committee. But anyway, I reluctantly agreed. It made sense for them and made their job easier. So we changed the name about 5-6 years ago to Peter McVeary Trust.
And things have really moved forwards since the early days when you moved into a flat in Ballymun. And it was filled with young men who are destitute, on the lowest rung of the ladder of society. I mean, do you want to talk about those early days?
Yeah, well, they were looking back on them now. Gosh, you'd never do now what we did then. As you say, we had one 3-bedroom flat. We took in everybody who turned up at the door. We would often have 15, 16 young people living in that flat. We had no money. We had no staff. I was it. So I was there almost 24/7 with them. It was you'd young people from the ages of 12 up to maybe 30, all sharing the same accommodation. So it was pretty chaotic, but it was great. And many of those young people who were in that flat, they look back on it. They still look back on it with very fond memories and say that was the best time of their life. And there was something very homely about it. It was like a home. I was the father figure, and everybody else was there. So but it was very amateurish. I hadn't got a clue about running hostels at that time. We made loads of mistakes. So today we have an organisation far more professional, far better quality of service to homeless people. And the accommodation that we can offer to homeless people is much better. In most of our places, homeless people have their own room. In some of our hostels, all the rooms are en suite. Places is bright, it's clean, it's warm, it's comfortable. Much, much better service to homeless people.
Why did you get into this? I mean, a lot of priests and religious, they have a ministry, a calling. Would you feel that that was the case? You had a calling?
No, it wasn't. I got into it by accident, and I stayed in it by accident. I was working in the city centre. We were working with young people there because it was young people were leaving school by the age of 12. They were hanging around the streets all day long. Many of their parents were unemployed, couldn't give them any money, so they were out doing a bit of robbing. By the time they got to 17 and 18, they were doing a lot of robbing and they were going to jail. And it was very predictable. So we opened services for young people, youth centre. We opened a craft centre where they could make various crafts and sell them and earn a few bob. We had employment schemes. And then we came across a 9-year-old kid who was sleeping on the streets. So we decided we should do something. So we opened a small little hostel for six young people, six boys. There were no girls on the streets back in the 70s. We opened a hostel for six boys up to the age of 16. And I thought no more of that. We already had a youth club. We had a craft centre. We now had a youth hostel. We now had a place for a youth hostel for young people. But then the numbers grew and grew and grew, and the young people got older and older and older, and were leaving the hostel, going back on the streets. So we ended up opening more hostels. Then the drug problem hit Dublin, so we opened our own drug treatment centres. So we've ended up, we have 12 hostels, 3 for under 18s and 9 for young homeless people over 18. We have 4 drug treatment centres. We have about 90 apartments to offer long-term accommodation to homeless people. And a drop-in centre. So it's come a long day, a long way from a three-bedroom flat.
And you, what sort of budget do you have to work with?
Our present budget is about 8 million. We get about 5 million from the state. We have to raise another 3 million. So we have, a wonderful fundraising committee. They're called Welcome Home. They run as many functions as they can manage to run. And we try and scrape together the 3 million as best we can.
3 million is a significant figure, especially in a recession.
It's harder and harder. As I say, we're running more and more functions to try and stand still. The big drop has been in corporate sponsorship because companies haven't got the profits anymore. So individual donations are still very good, and people are extraordinarily generous. And you get some people apologising that they could only give half of what they might have given last year. Then you get other people who give more and say, look, I know it's times are tough, here's a little bit extra. And then you get some lovely letters. I had a lovely letter the other day from a 12-year-old who said, I'm enclosing 100 euros. I've been saving this all year. And he said, I would hate to think of people not having a home to live in. Which was really lovely. Got another lovely letter a number of years ago from a 7-year-old who said, I've just made my first communion and I want to share the money I made with young children who are less fortunate than myself. And there was, I forget, 50 euros enclosed. And then 5 years later, I get a letter from the same kid. I've just made my confirmation. I want to share. You know, really, it's really very touching. And I say to myself, you know, there's a family, there's parents there who are really giving their young people the values that young people need.